Blog Talk Radio.
Felix, so this is the Hard Hits Network, Hard Hits Podcast. It is a Sunday afternoon, 3:07 to be exact, Eastern Time Zone here in New York City, Staten Island. A 78, 79 degree sunny day. There's plenty of baseball going on. I'm your host, Derek Felix. This is a special Sunday baseball podcast, so if you actually take the time to listen, whether it's now or later, thank you. If not, we hope you're enjoying your day. The reason for this podcast, well, a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. One is the lack of speed in today's game. I was looking at the stolen base leaders, and there's not one player. There's not one ball player this year, at least, that's on pace for at least 50 stolen bases. To say this is disappointing and discouraging would be an understatement. I mean, I don't think it could be stated enough that while the game has changed and evolved more into a station-to-station game, there should be some players that can steal 50 plus bases. So, you know, when you see a Trey Turner not on pace for at least 50 steals, or Billy Hamilton, and part of it is because he can't get on base, it is cause for concern. Now, the interesting thing about this is that you do have some great players on pace for 30 years. Mookie Betts would be one of the MVP candidates in that heated American League race. Jose Ramirez, the Indians third base slugger with the 30 home runs and 23 stolen bases, is another. Mike Trout is always a guy that can do both, and I think he's got a pretty good pace as well with the 29 home runs and the 20 stolen bases, so he has a good shot at it as well. So there are some guys that have a chance at going 30-30. And Javier Baez would be the fourth candidate with his 20, I think he's got 20 home runs now, or is it 21? I think he's got 21 home runs because I think he had two in back-to-back games for the Cubs. And I think he's at 19 or he might be at 20 stolen bases even. So you do have four candidates who could go 30-30, which is a positive. So if we want to look at the positive aspect, then we would definitely look at the fact that there are at least four ball players who could wind up with 30-30 seasons. But if you want to look at the downside would be at this point, it's just that there's not a lot in terms of players stealing as many bases as we're used to seeing. Baez, by the way, 21 home runs, 19 stolen bases. Just wanted to correct that part of it, okay? Goldschmidt is another guy who was come close before, but this year he's just hitting for power. saw 22 home runs and only 3 steals. So when it comes down to it, the stolen base category is a category that we don't see enough of. I don't think it's utilized properly. Odubel Herrera is a guy that usually can steal about 15 to 20 stolen bases. He's got 19 home runs, so he's already got a career high on that. But his stolen bases are down for the second straight year. So a little bit disappointing. A little disappointing. I still believe that, you know, you don't have to be a station-to-station team to have success. You know, because when it comes down to October, you know, you do have to do the little things that win ball games, which is why it was pretty so encouraging to see a couple of Yankees actually play a little small ball in the second game of the doubleheader yesterday, the disappointing loss against the Royals, the Omaha Royals, in the first game where Severino again did not have it, and that's a little bit concerning. Another start where he struggled. But when you have Greg Bird laying down a bunt against the shift down the third baseline for an infield hit, something he's done twice now in this past week, hey, I mean, that's pretty encouraging. You want to see a little bit more of that. Austin Romine, how about that that perfect bunt, like lay down for a hit to keep a rally going. That also was a very encouraging sign. So I think that, you know, as much as it's nice to have the long ball, and the Yankees obviously have the most home runs in baseball, and a lot of teams can go yard, and the Astros certainly can, you also could use that guy, that two guy, that 5-2 guy, who can steal bases, who can bunt, who can get the extra base, who can situational hit, who can run first to third or even first to home on a ball in the gap. So when you look at, you know, the teams and you look at the contenders, well, we know Jose Altuve can do that for the Astros. George Springer, even though he's not having a great year, he's a pretty fast runner as well. On the Red Sox, you have Mookie Betts, who obviously is very fast. Not to know, he's a very, very tough out these days for the Red Sox. And I guess you would have to include Francisco Lindor, and Jose Ramirez as guys that can also run pretty well. And of course, Lindor with the excellent defense at shortstop for those Indians. So, and it's basically a loaded category when you look at all the shortstops in the AL. So that's kind of where I stand. Lindor, by the way, leading the AL in runs scored. So I still believe that you have to manufacture runs. I still believe that you've got to be able to take that extra base when you have the opportunity. Lindor, by the way, probably will not get to 30-30, but he has the 27 home runs, so he'll have over 30 home runs. He's got 15 stolen bases, so it's hard to see. I think I'll be hard-pressed to get to 30 stolen bases. Maybe I'll line up with about 36, 37 home runs, and maybe 25, 26 stolen bases. That's what I see for him. And the unbelievable thing is that he probably won't finish in the top. He may not finish in the top five in the MVP voting because the MVP race is so stacked. And don't forget, Lindor is only 24. But when I talk about the MVP race, when we talk about the year that Mookie Betts has had with the Red Sox, I think he continues to lead in hitting with a 346 and the OPS close to 1,100, the walk-off home hit the other night, the home run. About all the production out of the leadoff spot, you have him. You have Mr. Trout, who has won the MVP twice. He always won the MVP, even though he plays for the Angels with the nice average of 310, 29, 59, 20 stolen bases, and very close second in the OPS race. You have J.D. Martinez. Now, J.D. Martinez is interesting because J.D., even though he does play left field, wouldn't call him anything great defensively, and could play a little DH. But, I mean, with three more runs knocked in today, as the Red Sox are winning again, he has 89 RBIs, and we're not even in August. So that kind of RBI production is pretty significant, well over his 32 dingers and 324 average. So he has a legit shot at 50 home runs, only two Red Sox have ever done that, one being David Ortiz. So that's an unique fact right there. Jimmy Fox would be the other one. So J.D. Martinez is shooting for a 50 home run year in his first year at the Red Sox, and who knows how many RBIs he could wind up with. I mean, we could be looking at 130, maybe 140 if he continues to hit the way he's hitting, and he has to be considered a legit MVP candidate. Jose Ramirez is another MVP candidate, obviously. I mentioned the fact that he's got the 30 home runs, 22 stolen bases, the 73 RBIs. It's cooled off a little bit, 293, but I'll tell you, he's a terrific ball player. So, I mean, those would be your top four guys. After that, then you could start looking at some of the other ball players. At this point, yeah, I guess I probably would put Francisco Lindor fifth from the end. So I probably would. I don't think there's any Yankee that will be in the top five this year, especially with Aaron Judge going down. Lester Carlo has like a monster finish. And he's been hitting very well. Everything he hits, he's just ripping. It doesn't look like there will be a Yankee in the top five, especially if Severino falling off. So that those could be your top five, and maybe then you look at an Alex Bregman. Even a Jean Segura or Chris Davis could get some votes. You know, when you look at an AP. So these are candidates. Jose Altuve is on the DL right now, last year's MVP. Of course, hitting for a very high average, but the power is down. 9 home runs, 329, 46 RBIs, 14 steals. So both the home runs and steals are a little down, and he's on the DL. So there will not be a repeat for MVP with a special ball player in Mr. Altuve. But you pretty much know who your MVP candidates are, and I think it's a very intriguing race. So that's where we are as far as the MVP race goes. So here's a legit question, and I'm going to do some research on it in this little podcast, this special baseball podcast that I am doing. You know, how many times have there been a year where not one ball player stole at least 50 bases? So what we can do, we can each year, is look at each year and actually assess, make the assessment on how many years there hasn't been at least one ball player with at least 50 stolen bases, because we can actually go through each year and we can get a better indication on what happened. So that's what we'll do. We'll take a look at each year and we'll have a better idea, because I still believe that speed is important, an important category. And Trey Turner is certainly a guy that I look at as a guy who can steal probably 50 bases in a season. Mostly stolen, I think, is 40. So the question does linger. It lingers because you do wonder, you know, why is speed down? Is it so much that they're playing the station-to-station baseball that they're hitting more for power? Is it that there's more free swingers? Is it just a change in philosophy? Well, I think all three would probably be true. But you have to ask, is it smart? Is it the way to go to just eliminate guys who just run and just can steal bases. Do they have to be a little more cognizant of pickoff moves, pitch counts, counts as far as the hitter, which hitter is up? You know, teams don't like to really steal when they have their big bopper up, whether it's a Giancarlo Stanton or it's a J.D. Martinez. Maybe that is a big part of it. So that could explain part of why you're seeing what you're seeing as far as the lack of base running, the lack of stolen bases. So disappointing, obviously, and something to me it's a little troubling. I think, yeah, I still of course enjoy watching baseball. I think baseball's a great sport, and I'm an old school guy. I'm an old school guy. You know, when I think about the era that I grew up in, the '80s, and I watched Ricky Henderson, the greatest ever, the stolen base king. What, stole 130 for the A's. Stole 100 couple times, stole 80 plus with the Yankees. The leadoff home run, the speed, the power, the speed, the ability to get on base. I mean, he could do everything. He could do everything. He was that good. How about Vince Coleman? Vince Coleman was another guy. When he played for those Cardiac Cards. I think that's where the Cardiac Cards nickname that I came up with, even though I came up with it in 2006. That Cardiac Cards nickname really, I think it resonates with those 80s Cardinal teams that played for Whitey Herzog. When I think about how they played the game, with the speed and just the peskiness that they play with, the doggedness. They play with a lot of aggressiveness between Vince Coleman and 1986 MVP Willie McGee. So when you look at those kind of players, those are perfect examples. Those guys are perfect examples of guys who would get on base, who would terrorize opposing pitchers, and they would do a great job. So what's happened? What has happened? I think it's disappointing. I think it's disappointing the way baseball has gone. You could say that, I'm bitter and I'm not appreciating how it's played now. And look, there's certainly, I mentioned the upper echelon players. When you talk about the upper echelon players, they're very special players, especially Trout, Betts. Was not even that big to begin with, but you start throwing those players out, and look, they're special talents. There are special talents in today's game. I don't want to diminish that. But I think when you see the lack of speed, that's a very disappointing thing. In terms of where the ball game is heading, and I think it's headed in the wrong direction. So this is just my opinion, and my opinion only. Just a couple updates here. Sean Newcomb pitching a no-hitter against the Dodgers, 2-6. The Braves have really struggled. They did get a win yesterday, finally. Actually, did they? They've struggled. They're struggling mightily. They're trying. Hang on. Look at Ichiro. Ichiro is a perfect example of a guy who could do everything. When he came over from Japan until 27 and wound up winning Rookie of the Year and MVP with the 350 and the 56 stolen bases, 69 RBIs, 242 hits, the runs scored of 127, 34 doubles, 8 triples. Ichiro was always a guy who could steal bases. Yeah, he didn't steal over 50 any more a year, but he was in the 30s, he was in the 40s, 20s. You knew what you were getting, and you knew he was going to be up there for that batting title and hit
hit a high average. He wasn't a guy who was going to draw a lot of walks because he was an aggressive guy. He didn't strike out that a lot either. He never struck out over 100 times. You know, as this is probably his final year with Seattle. Hasn't played too much, 47 at bats, but I'll tell you, he's never struck out a lot. You know, he was a guy that was just aggressive and had a great hitting style. So a very unique player, an MVP, a Hall of Famer. You know, if you just went based on what he's done, what he's accomplished since 2001 with those Mariners that won all those games, what they won, 111. They challenged the Yankees 114 wins of 98. Look at all the 200 hit seasons that he put up. Look at all the stolen bases, the runs scored. He didn't hit home runs. He wasn't a home run guy. He was a guy that can do everything though. And maybe that's part of the appeal for me being an old school fan, being an older guy. Not a newer guy like some of my co-hosts who certainly appreciate the baseball today and certainly appreciate the Trout, what Trout can do and so forth. But I'm an old school guy. I'm an old school guy. So I am. And, whether or not you want to admit it, acknowledge the fact that Jose Canseco was a 40-40 guy once with the Oakland Athletics, whether it was performance enhanced induced, as he claims. Still, that was a big guy. Canseco was a big guy, and he stole 40 bases in a season, along with the 40 home runs, and he did that. Now, most big guys are not coming close to that, so. There has been a change. There's been a change in philosophy. Now, this live podcast is going to be ending. If you listen to this part of the show, and you're probably on our archive or you're listening to the podcast part, I stay on anyway, so because I will stay on and do overtime. But I'm only saying this for anybody that was a live audience, but this was kind of a short notice show, so there probably isn't any live audience. So, an abbreviated, podcast here, Hard Hits, Derek Felix with you right now. We'll talk a little bit about Jay Happ's Yankee debut, which has been so far been pretty successful. The Yankees are up, I think, by 3 runs, 6-3, I think, at last check. And I'll talk a little more about baseball. Maybe we'll talk about the National League as well and talk about some of the players and where I think they rank. So I'm going to be staying on. And so if you do listen to the podcast, hey, you got to. This is like a special treat, basically. I decided to just do a Sunday podcast, so just all on baseball, all about the game, the national pastime, and just about where baseball is as far as where they are currently. And, they're also the trade deadline, which is 2 days away. So it's a Tuesday p.m. All right. So as we get ready for overtime here on Hard Hits Podcast, this is for the Hard Hits Network. I'm your host, Derek Felix. It is Derek Felix. It is 3:30 in the afternoon in New York City. Nice day. Not too humid out. Here in New York, in Staten Island, to be exact, and it's always humid out here, certainly. But it is a baseball Sunday baseball podcast, a special podcast edition. Who knows? We might do something after. But this is all about baseball. So I've talked a lot about speed and how there's no guys on pace for at least 25 stolen bases, and I just think it's very disappointing. I do. I've left out a couple of guys. Tim Raines is a guy that certainly comes to mind when I think of guys that could hit for a little power. And well, he was on those Expos teams, but he also could steal bases. So he stole. I think he stole like 70 in 1 year. So, and I don't know. Maybe it's just the way things are. It's just the way things are these days. So But if we look, just looking at stolen bases, and we look at the decrease that we're seeing, Starling Marte right now is leading the majors with 25 stolen bases. D. Gordon always has good speed and having a good year for the Mariners with 24. Those are your leaders, and they've played basically what? Almost, if they played 100 games yet, it's got to be close. Now, in 2017, D. Gordon had 60 stolen bases, Gordon. And Whit Merrifield, the very underrated and very good player, Whit Merrifield at 34. He's 29, kind of a late bloomer, a guy that's overachieved. Will he get moved? I mean, he'd be a perfect addition for somebody. I'm just going to go year by year, all right? So we know that D. Gordon stole 60 last year and Merrifield was 34. How about Jonathan Villar in 2016? He had a great year with the Astros, 62 stolen bases, and Rajai Davis with 43. What you will notice, Bora, is usually it's the NL guy that's stealing more. So this is something that you'll see. And D. Gordon in 2014 with 64 stolen bases. So D. Gordon's been a stolen base champ quite a few times. Quite a few. He looks like he could make it four this year. You know, he's in the AL with the Mariners. It'll be close. So it'll be a close competition. 64 with the Dodgers, D. Gordon, in 2014, and Altuve with 56. Altuve led the AL in 2015 as well with 38. So D. Gordon led with 58. So, yeah, as we basically, Eric Young, another guy that had speed, 46 stolen base in 2013. Kobe Ellsbury with 52. So even that year, you had a guy that stole at least 50. How about 2012? Was there a player that stole at least 50? No. Averta Cabrera, I slightly remember him, had 44 for the San Diego Padres. Mike Trout, that was his rookie year, stole 49. Great year in his rookie year. So that's the last time there wasn't a major leaguer who stole at least 50. In 2011, Brett Gardner and Coco Crisp, remember Coco Crisp, that great name. They tied for the AL lead with 49. Michael Bourne, who was a very fast guy, a speedster, a speed demon, didn't really do much else, but he stole 61. He was actually a stolen base king three times with the Astros. 2011, 61. 2010, 52. And 2009, 61. In AL, we did Gardner and Crisp at 49, 2010. Juan Pierre. Don't forget about how fast Juan Pierre is. I didn't even realize he played for the White Sox. He really bounced around a lot after playing for those Marlins in 2003. I mean, he even played for the Cubs. But Pierre had 68 stolen bases in 2010. Ellsbury in 2009, 70 stolen bases. Yeah, that's Jacoby Ellsbury, who basically has disappeared. How about 2008, 2008, Willie Taveras? I actually remember him. He had some really good speed with Colorado Rockies. 68 stolen bases, and Ellsbury with the 70. Actually, no, Ellsbury had 50, actually, in 2008. He had 70 in 2009. Now you go back to the era of Jose Reyes. When Jose Reyes was in his 2007, 78 stolen bases, and that 78 stolen bases is the most over the last decade. The 78 steals by Jose Reyes with the New York Mets in 2007. Carl Crawford and Brian Roberts, the Amarillo's two guys, yeah, they both had a lot of speed, tied with 50 in the AL. How about 2006? And, of course, Jose Reyes with the 64 stolen bases in 2006, and Carl Crawford with 58. 2005, Jose Reyes again, and he won it three times in a row. 60 stolen bases. 60 stolen. And Chone Figgins, another special guy, a guy who was a pain in the butt for the Angels, had 62. So he actually was the stolen base king that year. Now, how about we go back to 2004? Scott Poltsednik with a 70 stolen base year. And Carl Crawford, who won the stolen base crown a few times, 59 for Tampa. The previous year, 2003, Crawford had 55 steals, leading the AL. and it was Juan Pierre with the Florida Marlins of 65 stolen bases, so the most in the game. So what we're discovering is that in most of these seasons, there's been a player or two that have had 50 stolen bases, which is why I look at this year and I see nobody on pace for 50, and it's disappointing. It's pretty disappointing. Are there any other years where there were less than 50 stolen bases? Yes. 2002, it was Alfonso Soriano with the Yankees stealing 41. That was the year that he came up just short of 40-40 season, hitting 39 home runs. He did wind up with a 40-40 when he played for the did they already move? Yeah, I think they already were in Washington when he was with them. Did Alfonso Soriano when he did get to the 40-40. And Luis Castillo for Florida had 48 steals. In 2001, it was Pierre and Marlon tying in the NL 46, Ichiro with 56. Luis Castillo in 2062, Johnny Damon with 46. So what we're basically showing here, we're showing that the stolen base used to be a lot more valuable, back then. Ricky Henderson, at advanced age in 1998 with the A's, 66 stolen bases to lead the AL, lead the majors. Tony Womack stole 60 or more three times, won the NL crown with the Pirates twice and then with the Diamondbacks from 97 to 99. Brian Hunter had 44 stolen bases once. Brian Hunter had 74 steals with Detroit as well. And you go back, Kenny Lofton was a guy certainly that could steal bases. I mean, he actually was traded from the Astros to the Indians and was part of those Indians teams. And he had five straight years where he won the crown in the AL. It started in 92, ended in 96, 66, 70, 60, 54, and 75. 75. The NL, it was a little bit of a mixed bag. Derek Young with 53, Kelvin Alvarez in 95, 56, Craig Biggio with 39, a guy that certainly got the most out of his talent from Smithtown, New York, Hall of Famer. Chuck Carr, remember him on the Marlins, a speedy outfielder, couldn't really hit great, a singles guy basically, 58 steals. Marquise Grissom of those Expos, those great Expos teams, back-to-back stolen base crowns with the Expos in 1991 and 1992, 76 and 78. We're showing how valuable the stolen base used to be. Ricky Henderson, his name will show up a lot. In 88 to 91, he won it. 58 in 1991, Oakland. 65 in 1990 with Oakland. And with the Yankees and the A's combined, when he forced the trade in 89 to go back to Oakland and win the World Series, 77. 93 for Ricky in 88. So there you have it, Ricky Henderson. And on the other side, Vince Coleman. This is when Vince Coleman was king. Vince Coleman won the stolen base crown 6 years in a row from 1985 to 1990. So let's go from 85 on. 110 stolen bases, 107 stolen bases, 109. He stole 100 plus 3 years in a row, did Vince Coleman. 81, 65, 77. Eventually he went to the New York Mets and could not duplicate his success, and he became a bust, a major bust for the New York Mets. When they signed him in 1991 or 92. I think it was 92. And Paul Reynolds had 60 stolen bases for the Mariners in 87 to lead the AL. Ricky Henderson, if you take away Howard Reynolds' year in 87, and Ricky Henderson occupied the AL 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years. 11 out of 12 years, Ricky. Ricky, 100 stolen bases in 1980, 56 and 81, strike shortened season, 82, 130, the stolen base record, 130, major league record for the stolen base king, 108 in 1983. Yeah, that's just amazing. Don't forget about Tim Raines. I told you about Tim Raines. Tim Raines won that stolen base crown four times running from 1981 to 84. You know, Tim Raines was a great player. 78, 71, 78, 90, and 75 for Rock Raines. So, let's look at it for a little pop as well. We're showing it. Even, you know, we're showing how the stolen base has deteriorated in today's game. I've basically exemplified how stolen bases have basically died out. You know, Lou Brock also was a great stolen base guy. He had a then major league record, 974 of 118 steals. Maury Wills had 104 for the Dodgers. I think that was the Dan record. Yeah, Maury Wills used to be really fast. Willie Mays used to steal between 30 and 40. Of course, Willie Mays could have been a 40-40 guy. Mm-hmm. Louis Aparicio, both the White Sox and Orioles, a big stolen base guy. I mean, if you look throughout history, stolen bases used to be a lot bigger than they are today. But I think it really evolved. It started to evolve in the 60s. And the 80s, is when it was at its peak. And the 90s, it was still pretty prevalent. But it's kind of just tailed off over, I'd say the past 10 to 15 years, especially the past decade. And to me, that's a disappointing thing. Just to keep you updated, Sean Newcomb is through 7 innings against the Dodgers, and he still has his no-hitter. So he has 7 strikeouts, and he needs 6 outs. What I will do, since I'm not able to see it right now, broadcasting from a location where I can't see it, I will go into the box score. I'll give the pitch count on Sean Newcomb, where he is as far as that game against the LA Dodgers. I believe it's 4-0 Atlanta Braves. I missaid it before. The Yankees were winning 6-2, but the Royals of Oklahoma now make it 6-3. I'm going to give you J.A. Happ's line. J.A. Happ, who said he was really excited, always wonder what it would be like to wear the Yankee pinstripes. And his first outing was pretty good. He did a nice job today. So he went 6 innings, 3 hits, an earned run, giving up a home run, and a walk and 2 strikeouts. So he did a nice job. The concerning thing is that, again, Chad Green and Robinson both gave up home runs in the next 1 1/3. So, you know, they struggled yesterday, and once again, problematic, and it's made this a much closer game than it was. Aaron Hicks had the big day for the New York Yankees with 3 hits, including his 17th home run into the right field porch. He has 2 RBIs, 47 RBIs, so he's starting to heat up again. That's important, especially when you don't have Aaron Judge in the lineup. Austin Romine with a 1-for-3 outing, 270 hitter right now, and continues to be maybe the best backup in the game. So he's certainly done the job. Andujar, the hit machine himself with a hit and an RBI. Glaber with an RBI, but 0-for-4. And Giancarlo with 1 hit and 3 at-bats with an RBI as well. So then the Yankees are 6-3 up right now. They're in the top of the 8th as the Royals try to battle back. The Yankees are 4 outs away from picking up a series victory against the Royals, which is still important to win 3 out of 4. You don't want to split with the Omaha Crown, as I like to call them now. Home runs for Salvador Perez, though. That was the one touch-up against J.F., his 18th, even though he's hitting for a very low average. Hunter Dozier and Ronald Herrera, those are the 3 runs for the Kansas City Royals. as the Yankees just try to keep pace with the Red Sox, who are doing what they always do. They're winning. They're up 3-0. So, and Kimbrel is in to close that. So that will be probably over fairly soon, as Kimbrel needs 2 more outs against the Twins, who traded away one of their better players yesterday to the Diamondbacks. Escobar, Eduardo Escobar, getting traded. And this, let's look at this Red Sox. Eovaldi, they did trade for him, the ex-Yankee from Tampa. He gets some defense from Jackie Bradley. An unbelievable, amazing running catch where on a line drive to deep center where it didn't look like he had any chance of catching it. He runs it down. It's just very acrobatic and then just unbelievable. 7 innings, 5 strikeouts for Eovaldi and 4 hits allowed. That's a great outing, great debut for him. As I mentioned earlier, J.D. Martinez with 3 RBIs and 89 for the season, leading everybody. He continues his push for MVP. That's very real. It's very real right now. So, anything else here that I spot? Jonathan Schoop continues to stay hot for the Orioles. And I knew at some point that Jonathan Schoop was going to start hitting. And I think he's up to 17 home runs now, and he's really been on fire. And it would be crazy for the Orioles to get rid of Jonathan Schoop, one of their young players, that slugger that plays second base. You know, that'd be really, what are they going to do, get rid of everybody? Don't really make a lot of sense. See, the Indians are up 8-1. As you know, they're pretty much in cruise control. Melky Cabrera, yeah, remember him? Yeah, he actually hit his first home run, a solo shot. He just recently returned from an injury. Hasn't had much of an impact. But looks like they play him primarily in a platoon right now against righties. I think he's always been a better hitter from the left side anyway. Kluber, 7 1/3, a 1 earned run. 5 strikeouts, 2.79 ERA, as he continues to be one of the best pitchers in the game. So, the Nationals, you know, every time you think the Nationals are ready to make a push, Harper's starting to hit a little more of that average around 220. They take a step back. They're losing to the Marlins 5-0, and it's in the top of the ninth inning, and they're 52-52, so they could fall back under 500. So, I mean, there are some question marks regarding Bryce Harper. I don't think he's going to return. I don't think they're going to trade him, though. So I think they still think they can win the division and take their shot. So, but, you know, if you can't score a run against Jose Urena and you only get 1 hit and you struggle against the Marlins, so that's pretty sad. That's a pretty sad indication of where things are, of what's happened to the Nationals under Buck Martinez, that is. So, yeah, it was Dusty Baker's fault, wasn't it? All right. Just to update this, the game, the focus right now, and that is Braves and the Dodgers. It's the end of 7 innings. Now they're going to the top of the 8th inning. As Sean Newcomb trying to make some history here for the Atlanta Braves. 7 innings, no hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. A good starting pitcher for these Atlanta Braves. They did get a good return in that trade when they traded away Andrelton Simmons, the best shortstop in baseball. When I say that, I'm talking about the defense, obviously. But he also hits, you know, a high average now. It's for like 315, 320 for the Angels. But Sean Newcomb is right now, his pitch, he's at 100 pitches. So it is really questionable that he could even get a no-hitter by himself at this point. Markakis has 3 of the 4 runs knocked in. Nick Markakis had a great year, 318 with 11 home runs, 65 RBIs. You know, he won't win MVP. He probably won't even finish in the top 4 or 5, but I would definitely have him in the top 8 or 9. I mean, he's had a great year. Freddie Freeman will get most of he gets most of the ink for the guy I always liked. And Father Felix, my dad, of course, always liked Markakis and what he could bring when he was with the Orioles. that he used to have more power back in the day. But you look this year, he's hitting for this high average. Power is up. He doesn't usually hit for any home runs. Look at the RBI production. And he's just a really good ball player. He's always played a really good right field. So you have, that's where you have, with that, Zach Wheeler pitched another really good game for the New York Mets. They're pretty much they're irrelevant anyway, but I wouldn't trade Zach Wheeler. You know, Zach Wheeler is pitching the best he's pitched. If they trade, so I actually would trade Steven Matz. Although, you know, if you could maximize the value of a Wheeler, maybe you would consider it. Red Sox game is now final. A's could be on the verge of getting swept. They're down 2-0 on a Tom Murphy 2-run blast, as they've been cooled off by Colorado. Colorado's a good team. They're a weird team, but they're a good team. So that no-hitter is still going. We'll keep track of that. Now, how about in terms of ranking the best ball players? We know who number one is. Number one would be a guy by the name of Michael Nelson Trout. A guy that's a dominant player. But how would you rank the rest of it? Like, if you had to go, let's say you went 1 to 10. You know, what is your 1 through 10? This is something I've actually given some thought to. So, I mean, now, because rankings are always so, you know, everybody's going to have different criteria for their list. Most people would say Trout and Harper. They were 1-2 coming into the year. They were. I mean, Harper is an immense talent, certainly. Well, he's been obviously disappointing with the 218, 219 average. He does have 26 home runs. He leads the NL in walks. He's on pace for probably 100 RBIs. Yeah, you might argue, well, the protection really hasn't been there for him. And then you look at, like, Soto, and you look at what Juan Soto's done in his first year there. He's certainly the favorite to win NL Rookie of the Year. He's hitting over 315 home runs. He just continues to rake. I mean, we saw what he did to the Yankees in those games that they played with the Nats. That ball that he hit basically over the right field bleachers, if it's just something you just don't see, it's still traveling as we speak. So, or as I speak. And this is also Hall of Fame Day. Chipper Jones, one of the best role players that I got to see in the 90s and 2000s, going into the Hall of Fame. Colin Kennedy, one of my calls, celebrating the career brave, one of the best to go in. Six players are inducted. That includes a guy who could both hit for power and steal bases, Vladimir Guerrero. Vlad Guerrero, certainly with the Expos, with the Orioles, and with the Angels of Anaheim. So, yeah, Vlad Guerrero, certainly a very deserving guy to be included in that class with Chipper Jones. And don't forget, Vlad Guerrero back in the day, he could absolutely make that the role from right field. He had a cannon for an arm. So it was 5-2 guy all the way. And he certainly did not disappoint. Now, here's the amazing thing about Vlad Guerrero. If you watched him, you know how I always say there, like when I talk about James Harden or I talk about a basketball player, where I say he's never seen a shot he doesn't like. Well, Vlad Guerrero never saw a pitch he didn't like, because he'd swing at everything. And he somehow made contact. If a ball was down, almost in the dirt, he could actually golf it out. The amazing thing is he's never struck out over 100 times. And if you look at his career,
He had 737 walks to 985 strikeouts. So he was, well, he wasn't striking out a lot, but he was also, then he not been walking a ton, but his walks or strikeouts are pretty good for a guy who was a free swinger. You look at all the 300 years that he put up. Amazing. He won MVP once with the Anaheim Angels in 2004, his first year. With the Angels, and boy, oh boy, 32 home runs, 108 RBIs, 317. And this is a guy who could have won MVP with the Expos as well. I mean, he missed 40-40 in 2002, 39 home runs, 111 RBIs, 40 stolen bases, caught stealing 20 times. Sean Newcomb, by the way, is three outs away from making history. He's only 25 years old. Vlad Guerrero hit 336. If you go up and down Vlad Guerrero from 1997 through 2008. You could even include the 2009 year where he had a little bit of off year where he missed time with the Angels. He still hit 295 with 15 runs and 50 RBIs. But if you take that year out, you could just go 2008 over 300 with 27 runs and 91 RBIs. At 2010, second to last year with the Texas Rangers, 329 on 115. Amazing. Every year was 300, and he did it all. He did it all. He really did. When we look at the career statistics, he finished with 449 dingers for his career. That's when he totaled, wound up 181 stolen bases, so 318 career average, 401,496 RBIs, 2,590 hits, so 10 hits shy of 2,600 for his career. Terrific ball player. Even as last year, 2,913.63 with the Orioles at 36. That's a good year. It is. Oh, and he had three top three MVP finishes, four top four. But all-star a bunch of different times. A great player. Did he win any Gold Gloves? No, he was really considered a great fielder. He had the cannon of an arm. So I really loved watching Vlad Guerrero play the game. He was fun to watch. He really was fun to watch. But never won a World Series. They came close with the Texas Rangers at 35 years of age, but they lost to the Giants. And we know how good Chipper was. Chipper was tremendous. One of the greatest switch hitters that I've seen started playing third base. I still have most of his rookie cards, obviously. But he just was so consistent. Both sides of the play, yeah, he destroyed the Mets. He used to be the Shea Stadium basher or killer. I mean, he just, every year. Before Chase Utley, it was Chipper Jones. And Chipper, from 96 to 2003. At least 21 home runs or more. 100-plus RBIs in every season. 2 years of at least 20 stolen bases. And 300 or better in every season except one. The Yankees do get a victory against the Royals and win 3 out of 4. So they avert disaster, take 3 out of 4, and hold serve and at least stay within 5 or 5.5 of the Red Sox. But that's where they are. Chipper, 468 home runs, 1,623 RBIs,
150 stolen bases too. Only caught 46 times. 2,726 hits. Larry Tipper Jones. He won one MVP.
Yep.
In 1999. And of course won that one World Series when they beat the Indians. A terrific ball player at third base. A terrific guy. Congratulations to him. Part of this Hall of Fame class is Jack Morris and also Alan Travel. Yeah, I've heard a lot of arguments made against Jack Morris. I'm just going to say this. I don't think it's coincidence that most of his teams won World Championships. Jack Morris is a big part of that. So you may not consider him a conventional Hall of Famer, but he was at the front of rotations of the Tigers, of the Twins, and he was a big part of the Blue Jays too. So it's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence what a success was. So you could say, you could look at his ERA 3.0 and say, well, how could he be a Hall of Famer? I still remember that 10-8 masterpiece he pitched against the Braves. It was unbelievable. The masterpiece that he pitched against the Braves. Went 10 innings. At the age of 36. Won 20 or more three times. Yeah, I've heard a lot of arguments for Mike Mussina as a Hall of Famer. Well, if you're going to put Mike Mussina as a Hall of Famer, Jack Morris is definitely a Hall of Famer. Jack Morris is a big game pitcher. So that's where I stand on that. You could say whatever you want, but Jack Morris was a big game pitcher. So that's where I am on that. 254 wins. But yeah, I mean, his performance in the postseason, I think, is what really gets him in that Hall of Fame. So that's my argument. You could have your argument and say that, well, Standard kind of drops the fact that he's in the Hall of Fame, but I know what kind of pitcher he was. My dad certainly believes that he'll World Series MVP at the age of 36 against the Braves. I think it's hard for fans to understand. If you just look at the hard stats, like I usually do, you look at the ERA and we'll say, well, how can he be a Hall of Famer? But if you saw a pitch, know why you would understand better as to why he is a Hall of Famer. So that's my opinion. And of course, I'm a huge Alan Travel guy, so I'm very happy that he is in the Hall of Fame. Another member elected by the Veterans Committee. I just think it's a guy, he's a guy that, for what he did in his era, I always believed that he was a Hall of Famer. Now, maybe the stats would say otherwise, but I know what kind of player Alan Travel was. So, you could argue against him and say, well, not like he had great years. I mean, his best year was day 2v7 when he finished second in MVP voting with the 28 home runs, 105 RBIs, and 21 stolen bases, so 343. But he got the job done. Performed that nice double play combo with Lou Whitaker, Sweet Lou. And they did win a championship together, so we do have to consider that. That's your Hall of Fame. Of course, I didn't name everybody that's in that Hall of Fame today. Trevor Hoffman also finally gets in.
I don't think he should have had to wait that long. When I think about all the saves he had, he certainly was deserving. And Jim told me, certainly a guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. You think about the power, all the home runs he hit with the Indians, the Phillies too. And he was just unbelievable. Yeah, he was originally a third baseman. A guy walked, got on base. Yeah, he'd strike out, but he'd walk. But he could hit. He could hit better than 240 or 250. So, I mean, yeah, he would hit a lot of home runs, and he was just terrific. You know, he doesn't have any MVP years. He doesn't need it. He doesn't need it with the over 600 home runs that he wound up with. With the RBI, 1,699 for his career. Yeah, he went from third base to first base to some DH at the end. He was just always very productive. Yeah, that was a guy I remember I first discovered looking at my old Baseball America encyclopedia, which I think I got either 1991 or 1992. Yeah, I said I bought it as a help me get ready for my draft. back in the days when we had microwave. Wow. Those are old times right there, man. I'll tell you. But I'm happy for every guy that's in that Hall of Fame today. I think they're all deserving. Getting back to top players, you know, the criteria that's involved. I don't know if it's the pressure for Bryce of the new contract or it's the fact that he hasn't really had a lot of plate protection this year. And it's funny, a little bit of coincidence that Daniel Murphy was out most of the year and Harper's production was way down. And everybody said, well, Harper hit behind Murphy, so wouldn't really matter. But also, don't forget, Ryan Zimmerman was tremendous last year, too. And that was not going to repeat itself, and he's been hurt most of the year. So, it does go to show you. But they still have a good lineup. You know, you look at Trey Turner, he's excellent. Soto, he just looks like he's going to be a stud. You know, they're probably not trading Bryce. I think he's going to the Dodgers. I will continue to believe that. Unless the Dodgers decide not to, but I think the Dodgers would be interested. You know, they also have to re-sign Kershaw, though, so he's actually still pitching very well, even with the fact that he had the back injury. That was on the DL again, but until recently, when he pitched into the seventh inning the other night, gave up only one run. Still pitching very well. How would my top 10 look? I like Mookie Betts better, personally. Yeah, and this is nothing against Bryce. Bryce is exciting to watch. He has that energy. He's won an MVP. He's proven what he can do. I like Mookie. I would go 1, Trout. 2, Mookie Betts, who I think will be MVP Betts finally this year. 3, this is where it gets tough. Yeah, you could. A lot of people would say Harper. Some people would say Manny Machado, maybe one of them. But I think Max Scherzer have to be included in the top 5. I mean, you think about how dominant he is and the Cy Youngs, what he's been able to do with the Nationals, one of the greatest signings ever. So I have to put him. I'm going to put him 3. I'll put him 3. I'll put him ahead. I'll put him ahead of Manny Machado. I'll put him ahead of Harper. I still think that's probably your 5.
Well, that would be your five. So I didn't just do position. I decided, you know, if I'm going to do this, I'm not just going to do position players. I'll include some pitchers. So I'm generous enough to put, to believe that Scherzer is in that top five with the big guys. The next, who would be the next five? Well, I think it probably is a mixture of of Jose Altuve, who is just terrific and just always for great average defense, short can steal bases. He just clutch, a clutch performer. Jose Ramirez has definitely put himself into that category. When you look what he's done with the Indians and how he's evolved as a ball player, Aaron Judge. You know, there are still things he can get better at too. There's still some holes in his game. You know, obviously the very disappointing splits, home, unbelievable, but on the road he's just dismal this year. So I mean, there's still things that he can get better at. But he is a very good fielder too. He's an excellent, very good right fielder. Has really great speed for a big guy. I mean, he can steal base if you need it. Takes pitches, will take his walks. If he ever cut down on the strikeouts, imagine what his batting average could be then. He can be very selective at times. Certainly, that's just not a guy I would want to face. It's not. He's not a guy I would want to see. Francisco Lindor, I think, is one of the best players in baseball. He plays on the Indians, obviously. And I definitely would put him in the top 10. So, I've rattled off about six or seven names so far. I mean, it's not too long ago, I probably would have put Severino as the second best pitcher. But I think you have to give the edge to Verlander. I mean, even now, I mean, he's still pitching great. He's still dominating. He's still dominating. You know, where do you rank about Arenado? Is Arenado a top 10 player? He probably is with the defense. I understand he plays for the Rockies, but he should be in that top 10. Yeah, I actually initially had him outside that top 10. But I have him in the top 10. I think you have to. How about Jacob DeGrom? Actually, I would put DeGrom. I think DeGrom's a little better than Verlander. You know what? Verlander's so. God, I mean, it is so hard to not put DeGrom higher. His team never scores runs. I mean, they got a run for Zach Wheeler today, but I mean, Jesus Christ. Right now, Newcomb is two outs away. So Newcomb. Freddie Freeman certainly in that list. He's in that mix. So Freddie Freeman certainly he's in the upper echelon of players. I named the two Indians that I like. J.D. Martinez. How can he not be in like your top 10 or 12? I mean, yes, he's not great defensively, but boy. I mean, look at the numbers he puts up. Imagine if the Astros had kept him and not put him on waivers. Wow. That would have been something. Jeez. Look what he's doing for the Red Sox. Terrific. Where does Severino rank? I would put him in the top 20. He obviously drops a couple of notches, but he's a top 20. He's in the top 20. Chris Sale probably is top 20 as well. So,
all very intriguing. Are there any aside from Altuve, you know, I think the other Astros, not named Altuve or Verlander, were all guys in the top 30. I'm talking about Carlos Correa, who I thought would take a leap, but he has not. I'm talking about George Springer, who's kind of he's had a little bit of a down year this year. And a guy that's really on the rise, Alex Bregman, a Jew that could rake. There's Jews that can rake right there. So all guys that are on the rise when you look at where things are right now. Newcomb right now, anytime you make a list like this, it's subjective. It is subjective, these kind of lists. That's just the way it is. Goldschmidt, you know, Freeman, Goldschmidt, two of the best, certainly. Both, I would include both. Got a full count here. It's a full count. Yeah, it's two outs now. All right, so they are down to the final hitter. It is Chris Taylor, a pesky hitter. First pitch is a ball on the inside part of ball seam fastball. First two outs were a Forsyth fly out to left fielder Acuña, and Cody Bellinger flew out to Marquez. So right now he needs one more out for history. 25-year-old Sean Newcomb. This is a good pitcher. A four-seam fastball called strike one on the inside part. All right. So we'll do a little play-by-play. And it's another four-seamer fouled off. 95. It's got it going. One and two. One more strike, and he makes history. Become the first Braves pitcher to pitch a no-hitter in their new ballpark. Oh, the 1-2 is coming. And we'll give you the update when it comes. So 1-2 pitch is coming to Chris Taylor, who had an excellent year last year. He's started to heat up a little. So here is the 1-2 off the inside part of the plate, 2-2. Most of these pitches have been on the inside. Is he going to go back outside maybe and try to get him with something away? It's a 2-2 count right now. Newcomb against Chris Taylor, as we are in the overtime. Newcomb trying to get history here. This pitch is an outside changeup, fouled away. So, yeah, he did try to go outside and change it up after the fastballs, after going inside primarily. Still square at 2-2. He's got to be at about 100, and he's at 133 pitches, folks. I mean, he gets this. Boy, oh, boy, he really will have earned it. I hope he gets it. So there are 2-2. 134th pitch is going to be coming to Chris Taylor. As we wait for this thing to update. I can't believe I'm following this without. In play, a four-seam fastball, and oh, man, it looks like the no-hitter is gone. A single for Chris Taylor to left field. Oh, man. 94. And he gets the single and breaks up the no-no. And I would venture to guess with that many pitches, he's going to come out of the ball game and get a standing ovation from the crowd. He was one pitch away from getting his first career no-hitter. Sean Newcomb with 134 pitches, 81 strikes, an excellent ratio. Chris Taylor does break it up. That's a bummer. I mean, a guy goes that deep into his game and he's not going to get the hitter, and now they'll probably pull him out. But, you know, you have to congratulate the kid. He certainly had a great day for him. And that's unfortunate. I'm sure I'll look at the highlights later. 8 strikeouts for Newcomb. He'll be coming out of the game, I would have to think, as Winkler now replaces him. And Manny Machado, one of the top 5 players in the game, is up at the plate. By the way, if you want to know why I put Machado ahead of Harper, his defense. It's his defense. I mean, he made a play at third base yesterday. He made it so smooth to turn to start a double play to turn two, a 5-4-3. And he could play short, play third. I think you really lose much offensively with Machado. Harper, I just love Manny Machado's defense. A little younger also. So, that's why I put Manny ahead of Harper. Manny's a terrific ball player. He really is. Shame on the Orioles. Give out that contract to Chris Davis, and they're trading away their best players. That is just a joke. Where does a guy like Madison Bumgarner rank in a list like the list rankings that I'm trying to do? You know, that's a good question. Is he a top 30 guy? You know, when you put pitchers in the list, you know, you have to consider the position, how they rank every fifth day compared to the position players. So, like the best catcher right now in the game is JT Realmuto of the Marlins, who is a great defensive catcher, as well as hits over 300 for the Marlins, yeah, believe it or not, and hits for that power, is on pace for 20 home runs. Has a great wins above replacement. Although I don't put all my stock into WAR as some of our other co-hosts do, like John G and Oriole. But I think JT Realmuto is an excellent player. And it looks like a RBI single here for Manny Machado. Plates one. Single. Scores Chris Taylor, who took second on defensive indifference. It's 4-1. And, of course, the run gets Charles Tegueso, the guy who was so close to getting that no-hitter, Sean Newcomb. That's just the shame of it. You know, but they had to take him out. Then when you throw they stayed with him as long as they could. They really let him try to get it. And he threw a lot of pitches. Remember that no hitter that Johan Santana threw a decade ago? I remember watching that with JPG. And what I think the most interesting thing, as great as it was, see the Mets make history and Johan Santana get that no hitter. The thing I remember most is Terry Collins in the post game. He cried. It was emotional. Yeah. It's an emotional mess because he left him in there. This ball game is now over as Kemp makes the final out. So a final score, the Braves defeat Dodgers 4-1. And the Braves get a much-needed win. And Sean Newcomb gets a well-deserved victory. So good for him. Misses that no-hitter by one out. 134 pitches, and 83 were strikes. Terrific ratio, 8 strikeouts. Chris Taylor broke it up. He came around to score after taking defensive indifference on a Manny Machado RBI single. But eventually Winkler does get Kemp to ground out to 3. Johan Carmargo to Freddie Freeman. I've seen that source of Brewers with the Braves looking for third baseman. I never understood why. And Camargo's done a solid job. He's got 10 home runs. I'm not so sure they should be in the market for that. Now here's a question. You know, here's a question for the Diamondbacks. And the only reason I ask this is because, you know, they had a guy that looked like he was going to be a 25-30 home run guy that was going to be pretty consistent. But he's kind of having a down year. So I have to ask this question. What's the deal with Jake Lamb? Jake Lamb, you know, a couple of years ago, looked like he was on the verge of being a star at third base, would hit 30 or 35 home runs, knocking over 100 every year. But this has been a little bit of a different year for Jake Lamb. So I'm just asking, where is Jake Lamb in the equation when it comes to the Diamondbacks? And they added Eduardo Escobar. I would assume that Jake Lamb is not 100%. Escobar obviously can play that third base position. So let's just look here at things with the D-backs, who are right in that race with the Dodgers. And of course, the Rockies are right there now also. So there's a couple of interesting things going on. Escobar plays shortstop. Okay, so. And yes, Jake Lamb did go on the disabled list, okay, with a left shoulder contusion. So, I mean, he probably won't be out too long. Maybe 2 weeks, and 2 weeks he'll be back. It is a shoulder contusion. You do need the shoulder to swing the bat. But he's really tailed off. Did the league, I guess, catch up to him? Maybe they did. I mean, he only has 207 at bats this year. He's still only 27. 222, 631, 631 RBIs, and 655 OPS. It's awful for him. I don't really know what's happened. I can't really explain it.